buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast.
Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com.
Get prepared before disaster strikes. PrepperRecon.com offers Molly-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, tough strip bandages, and so much more. $99 includes shipping. Go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
This is the second half of my interview with James Wesley Rawls, creator of SurvivalBlog.com. Enjoy the show. Coming back to the political side of that, because I think there's probably some things that we didn't cover. First of all, for the conventions, for this potential for massive civil unrest, if you live in a city like Cleveland, what do you need to be doing right now to start getting ready for that? Is that a really good time to take a vacation? Do you need to be stocking up your pantry in case you're not able to leave your house? What other things should people that they're in any of these cities, what do they need to be thinking about?
Well, you know, Cleveland is a particularly bad case, but any place where you have an urban concentration of population is always at risk, and always at greater risk than the suburbs and certainly than the country. Regardless of what goes down, wherever you have masses of people together, there's always greater risk. There's always the risk of riots, of looting, of panic runs on the stores, and also of just getting bottled up by monumental traffic jams that keep people from leaving the cities. Look at what happened with Hurricane Katrina when everyone tried to leave the greater New Orleans area simultaneously. A lot of people just simply ran out of gas. And it was only the people who were smart enough to get off on the side roads and not take the interstates out of the area that were able to get out of there reliably. So for anyone living in an urban area, yes, it might be a real that if you're living in one of the cities where they're going to have one of the major conventions, it would be wise to be on vacation at that time at your well-stocked country retreat, or at least visiting your well-stocked country cousins if you have them. And for everyone else, it's wise to be stocked up at any given time anyway. Just look at this political season as a period of additional risk.
And I think that folks may be underestimating the likelihood of Hillary being our next president, and like you said, all the gun control measures that are going to come with that, either, you know, massive taxes on guns or outright bans of guns, outright bans of certain capacities of magazines. I think that they could be underestimating that, and I think that risk is being exacerbated right now by the Republican Party because they are absolutely in a kamikaze nosedive between the infighting between Cruz and Trump and the talk of the party not giving the nomination to Trump even if he has the popular vote, which I think is probably going to be suicidal for the party. You want to weigh in on that?
Yes, I think we'd end up with a situation roughly analogous to when Romney got the nod, where the typical Republican voter felt disillusioned and just simply stayed home from the polls. And that could very well happen if Ted Cruz gets the nomination and the average Republican feels cheated by the Republican National Committee and the convention, where they'll just simply stay home. They'll say, well, I'm not going to vote in this election. And then unfortunately, the end result will be that Hillary Clinton will probably become president.
And I seriously doubt that if the nomination, if it's outright stolen from Trump, I don't expect him to go quietly. I would expect him to probably run as an independent candidate. And then I think that that would probably split the Republican vote. And then mathematically, it's Hillary's show at that point.
Right. Yes. If he ends up splitting the ticket a la Ross Perot, we could see. Again, it's like all roads lead to Hillary winning, unfortunately, unless the convention ends up with a nomination for Trump. And even if Trump is nominated, my fear is that immediately after he gets the nomination, the democratically controlled mass media is going to go into absolute attack mode, and they are going to dig up monumental piles of dirt. In fact, they've probably been doing all the background research already on Trump, on each of his marriages, on his sons, on all of his business dealings, on how he's treated his hotel workers. You name it. They're going to dig up just about anything to make him look like a megalomaniac, you name it. They'll probably try to make him look like a child molester by the time they're done. But they're going to dig up so much dirt on him while simultaneously soft-pedaling everything that went on with the Clintons. That's all we're going to hear about between the end of the Republican convention and the November election is the scandal of the day on Trump, and they'll keep digging up scandal after scandal after scandal. We can count on that because they definitely want Hillary to get in. And as I mentioned, simultaneously, they're going to soft pedal everything about Hillary. And I would not be surprised at all to see Obama issue a pardon well in advance of when Hillary would ever go to trial. And unfortunately, we have the precedent of Gerald Ford and his pardoning of Richard Nixon. That was done before Nixon was ever even indicted.
Hmm. And on another subject, while the press was arguing about which bathroom Caitlyn Jenner can use, we saw a 7.1 earthquake in Japan, a huge volcano erupt in Mexico, and a massive 7.8 in Ecuador that left over 600 dead and more than 27,000 people injured. All of that activity happened on the Ring of Fire, which is connected to the Cascadia and the San Andreas faults. Can you give us some tips on how to be prepared for earthquakes and what you'd be thinking if you were in Southern California or along the Cascadia fault in Washington?
Well, if for anyone west of the Cascades or anyone anywhere in California, really, when the 1906 earthquake occurred in San Francisco, most people don't realize it, but there were houses destroyed as far north as Arcata up on the very northern coast of California. Where my family settled in the Anderson Valley, which is the Boonville area of California, about, 100 miles north of San Francisco. There were houses all up in the down the valley that had their chimneys fall down. But luckily that most of the houses were of wood frame construction and they overall survived. But it was years before they rebuilt the chimneys up and down that valley. In the event of a major earthquake, and here I'm talking 8.5 or larger, on the San Andreas Fault or any of the other, the Hayward Fault or any of the major faults in California, we could see a substantial disruption of infrastructure. That would mean a disruption of the highway system, which would mean, in turn, a disruption of food coming out of the Central Valley of California, which is really one of America's major breadbaskets. So fruit and nuts in particular would be very difficult to come by. And the economic impact of a massive earthquake in California's Silicon Valley would be monumental. It would be years before they could recover from that. So I think it's wise for anyone who lives in an earthquake region to be very well stocked up and to have multiple bug out plans, because if you look at the history of like the Loma Prieta quake, for example, even the overpasses that were not physically affected were shut down for safety inspections for a period of about 72 hours following that quake. No one was allowed on the freeways, and the surface streets were just a mess following that earthquake. We could probably expect the same thing to happen again, where they'll have seismic inspections that go on, safety inspections following an earthquake, which will make it very difficult for anyone to get out of Dodge by way of the highways or freeways. So everyone needs to map out primary, secondary, tertiary, quarantary routes to get them on the road to their pre-stocked, pre-positioned retreats. And if there is an earthquake, you need to make sure that you're one of the first people on the road on surface streets. Again, you want to try to avoid bridges, overpasses, any major freeway structures. You want to stay off the freeways, and you want to be on those small roads getting out of town, and you want to be one of the first ones on the road to beat the rush, because once the rush starts, it's going to turn all of the smaller highways and the surface roads into linear parking lots.
The likelihood of a Yellowstone caldera event is fairly low, but it's not zero. If we were to see an eruption there, what would that look like for the region and for the rest of the U.S.?
Well, one thing that most people don't recognize with Yellowstone is that the predecessor event with the Yellowstone super caldera, according to geologic records, dumped a tremendous ashfall to the east. And in fact, as far as the east coast of the United States, there was up to 2 meters of ashfall in the eastern states, particularly in the upper Midwest. The amount of damage that would take place is almost incalculable by modern standards. It would be in the trillions and trillions of dollars to have that much ashfall. The areas west of Yellowstone and north of Yellowstone, I think, will not be affected by much more than just localized earthquakes and maybe some localized ashfall. But the vast majority of the ash is going to fall following the prevailing winds, which are to the north and to the northeast, not due north, not due south, not to the west, but to the northeast is where they're getting absolutely buried in ash. So I certainly wouldn't want to be living in South Dakota or Illinois or Ohio, because if Yellowstone does go, and again, as you mentioned before, the chances in any given year are minuscule. In fact, the chances in our generation are minuscule. Over the next 300 or 400 years, maybe a 10% chance. Over the next 3,000 years, maybe a 40% chance. So on a geologic scale, the risk is actually fairly low, but the implications are huge if it were to happen.
And then Jesus said in Matthew 24:7-8 that earthquakes were one of the signs of the beginning of sorrows. So for folks that believe we're approaching the end times, does it make sense to take some precautions against more earthquakes and a potential caldera event?
Sure. And there's some really simple things that people can do to upgrade their houses. A lot of houses just simply sit on their foundations and are not bolted to their foundations. It's a relatively easy retrofit to bolt a house down. That's pretty common practice in Arizona and California and places like that. And for preppers, it's important that for your stored foods, if you have them all on shelves, that you simply throw some power screws in or eye bolts, even better, in on the front of each shelf, a few inches up from each shelf and put bungee cords across your shelves so that all your stored food, especially that food that's in glass, doesn't go rattling off the shelves and end up in a huge mess on your floor. It's a pretty cheap fix, and it's highly recommended.
And 2 meters of ash, is that something that somebody would have to be concerned with getting outside and clearing that off of their roof? I know that when we had the huge snowstorm in the east a few years ago, people were having to shovel snow off their roof to keep their roofs from collapsing.
Right. The same thing could happen with a major ash fall, but the implications for any engine, whether it's a turbine engine or a regular internal combustion engine, is huge. If nothing else, you really should have a few spare air filters for your each of your vehicles. But if it's a massive ash fall, it's going to absolutely overwhelm the system. And it would be months or probably years before it got to the point where you could still be running an engine reliably.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proven to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on gold and silver. Check out silver.com today. Ready Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at readymaderesources.com.
Hey, preppers and patriots. We just passed the third anniversary of the Prepper Recon podcast, and it couldn't have happened without you. To say thanks, I want to send you a free PDF of the 7-Step Survival Plan. It's a basic blueprint that will help you prioritize your efforts and make sure you're not missing any important areas of prepping. To get your free copy, just email me. It's prepperrecon@gmail.com and put 7-step PDF in the subject line. Thanks again for 3 great years of the Prepper Recon podcast.
It's going to put a big hamper on agricultural production as well. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. The implications of a major event like that are huge. And it's just a matter of thinking through all of the threat mitigation and developing alternate plans. For anyone who would be downwind of Yellowstone, here I'm talking eastern Montana, the Dakotas, the Plains states in particular, or the adjoining areas in Canada, up in Saskatchewan, for example, you need to have a plan to get out of Dodge and have an alternate retreat. It's just common sense.
And I think one of the biggest things that we're going to have to worry about in any type of a catastrophic event, whether it's an earthquake, a financial crisis, or civil unrest, is desperate, unprepared people. Would you agree with that?
Certainly. That applies across the board, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's an economic collapse, whether it's an earthquake, a flood, whatever. Your biggest risk is not going to be physical from the event itself. It's actually more psychological and social in terms of just being able to interact with your neighbors without getting eaten.
And how do we prepare for that?
Well, you need to be prepared to hunt. First, you need to live in a lightly populated region. As I described at my website, if you go to survivalblog.com, in the left-hand bar, you'll see a list of static pages. If you click on the link for retreat areas, I show some fairly safe areas in the United States that have light population density, energy independence, and mixed economies with plentiful water. And the prime area that I describe is what I refer to as the American Redoubt. If you can strategically relocate to a safe region like the ones that I describe at that webpage, your chances of survival will be substantially higher. From an actuarial standpoint, I would say that your chances of survival would probably be 5 to 10 times greater than simply hunkering down in the suburbs, or perhaps 20 or 30 times greater than hunkering down in an urban area. Relocation is crucial for any major societal disruption. And unfortunately, we have a society that is so technologically complex and interdependent these days that it doesn't take much to break the system. And your only sure bet is to strategically relocate to a lightly populated area where there simply are going to be fewer people and fewer problems.
And my wife and I just had the opportunity to have dinner with Bob Griswold from Ready Made Resources last week. And as an operator who's worked in some really bad neighborhoods, one of the things he reiterated to me was the importance of night vision. And I know that's something you're a big proponent of, because a lot of the bad stuff that happens, happens at night. Is that right?
Right. And you really want to have night vision equipment because it acts as a force multiplier. And it actually gives you the ability to be just about fully combat effective in hours of darkness as you are in daytime. And as a force multiplier, it allows you, if you want to make a preemptive attack, if you know that a large group of looters is heading your way, if you could make that attack at night, you could have 10 men have the combat effectiveness of 100 men at night if your opponents do not also have night vision equipment. So it's really crucial that every family have at least one pair of night vision goggles, and more importantly, at least one night vision weapon sight. My favorite for that is the AMPVS-14 night vision monocular. It does not have a reticle, so you need to line it up behind a night vision compatible dot optic, just like a typical Bushnell or whatever. Any optic that you can dial down to a very low level, because a standard red dot will absolutely overwhelm a night vision scope if it's on at full intensity. So it's crucial that you have that equipment and plenty of spare batteries, rechargeable batteries, and you can indeed get CR123 rechargeables, for example. And the beauty of the PVS-14 is that it runs on standard AA batteries. If you're going to get rechargeables, make sure they're the high-voltage rechargeables, because a lot of the rechargeables only put out 1.7 volts, and you really need a full 1.25 or close to it to operate a lot of night vision equipment. So make sure you're getting high voltage rechargeables. And just a small solar panel will make a huge difference, because that'll keep that night vision equipment running for years, long beyond the storage life of standard batteries, if you have rechargeable batteries and a charging tray for high quality nickel metal hydride batteries. My favorite there is the, I think it's Sanyo Eneloop batteries. It's E-N-E-L-O-O-P, Eneloop.
And I know that EOTech makes a reflex sight that has a low enough setting to be used with the PVS-14. Do you know of any other reflex sights that might be a little bit less than $500 a pop that would be compatible with the PVS-14?
Even a $60 Bushnell red dot, if you get one of the ones that will dial down to a very low level, is indeed night vision compatible. You don't need to have a full up $600 EOTech with the NV button. Okay.
And we're always getting new folks listening to the show who are just waking up to the need to prepare. Can you give them three quick tips on where they should start?
Wow, there's so much to cover. I would actually recommend just one quick tip, and that is go to my website at survivalblog.com. In the left-hand bar, click on the link that's marked Getting Started, and that is will bring up a web page that's specifically designed for preparedness newbies. That'll get you up to speed in terms of all the basics on food storage, water filtration, and home food production, home security, and so forth. All and communications, all those major topics are covered at least briefly there. And with that under your belt, then take a look through the archives of my blog. Survivalblog.com has been published for 10 years now, and there's over 40,000 archived articles and letters. They're all fully searchable and available free of charge. So whether it, if you want to research just about any topic, whether it's night vision equipment, for example, or water filtration, or how to pump gasoline from an underground fuel tank when the power grid is down, all those topics are covered in my blog in detail. And I would recommend that people take the time to research the topics that they know they're in deficit on in their hard copy files and print out the most important articles so you have those in a EMP-proof form. You need to build reference binders of those articles. And it's great to have it all on a memory stick or to have, you know, we also sell an archive DVD, but nothing beats hard copy. And I recommend that you buy some large 3-inch ring binders and a whole stack of document protectors and start putting together your own reference library. You want to have the manual for each piece of electronic equipment you own. You want to have a owner's manual and complete disassembly instructions for every firearm you own, for every piece of radio equipment, for every optic, and so forth. You need to have full documentation. You want to also have a binder with nothing but recipes, for example, and all the old-fashioned ways of doing things. 19th century technology is appropriate technology. So, again, you need to study up and build reference binders. And I hate to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I think that Survival Blog is a good starting point simply because our archives are so deep and so rich, and they're free. Dig in, folks.
And your novels, like the Patriot series and your new Counter Caliphate Chronicles, those are also chocked full of survival tips. And besides the survival tips, the characters have to go through all of these different scenarios. And as you're reading that stuff, you're having to ask yourself, how well prepared am I to get through a similar scenario? And it's bringing up questions that sometimes folks wouldn't even know to ask themselves. So I think that's another great teaching tool is the fiction and your stuff is just loaded with great prepper tips. Where's the best place to find those?
Oh, well, certainly through Amazon.com, but you might even want to look in your local thrift store first. Several of my novels have been New York Times bestsellers, so they're printed in large numbers, and they're often available for as little as 25 cents a piece at a thrift store. So look there first. Also look at library book sales, like Friends of the Library type sales. And then if you can't find my books there, the least expensive place to look would be eBay, where you can find books for as little as a penny plus shipping. A lot of thrift stores now are employing people who do nothing but fill book orders at a lot of the books sell for a penny or a dime plus $2.99 shipping. So you can pick them up on eBay. You can also find used copies on Amazon. And then as a last resort, you can always get an ebook or a paperback in newly printed form. But look around and try to find a used copy first.
Jim, thanks so much for making time for us today.
Thank you so much for having me on. And I pray that all of your listeners take what they've heard seriously. The time for dawdling is over. We are living right on the edge of an economic precipice. And it is wise and prudent to prepare.
In Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, Book 1, Behold Darkness and Sorrow, Daniel Walker begins having prophetic dreams about the judgment coming upon America for rejecting God's word. through one of his dreams, Daniel learns of an imminent threat of an electromagnetic pulse attack, sending the country into a technological dark age. If they want to live, Daniel and his friends must focus on faith, wits, and preparation to be ready before the lights go out. Buy your copy of Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, Book 1, Behold Darkness and Sorrow, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.